and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry Maxtay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. When there's something strange in your neighbourhood, who are you going to call? The Neighbourhood Watch guys. See it, say it, sort it. And alongside me is the restless spirit to my uneasy mixer. It's Ben Vanderveld.
Ooh.
Ben's got his vibrator out.
Yeah.
We're not going to get any better than that, right? Podcast over.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, well, that's what happens, I imagine, when porn stars die and then haunt places. Instead of rattling chains, they just rattle butt plugs.
It's always like, oh, like a nobleman or a maid. It's never, oh, yeah. Who's the ghost that's haunting this building? Actually, it was a porn star. If you listen carefully, you can sometimes hear them frigging themselves for the benefit of someone at the other end of the newly invented telephone.
Well, or it's never even, it's always an upper class people. I feel like being a ghost is sort of the supernatural version of fox hunting or going on a promenade around Europe in the 17th century. You never get working class ghosts, do you? It's because they're working down the mines in the afterlife.
I was going to say it's because working class people know how not to overstay their welcome, unlike most of the aristocracy.
You know how like a lot of ghosts are from Victorian times because they have the best outfits?
Yes.
So like, I think it's the Victorians, like the Victorian ghosts kind of like hide all the sex ghosts away, right? Like, because you ever been to the sex museum in Amsterdam? It's the world's funniest place.
Oh yeah, I've not been there, but it's sort of amazing.
It's so funny because the best part about it is, like, you know, they invent like photography, and then they immediately all take pictures like naked because it's hilarious, right? But yeah, they're still Victorians with handlebar mustaches and they leave their hats. You know, so like they're doing, like they're standing there, hands on their hips, like jolly grins, Victorians, you know, neck up, but like horny from like body down.
Do the pubes not have handlebar mustaches as well though?
But yeah, I just think the Victorian ghosts are putting a kibosh on all the sexy ghosts.
That's true. Yeah, there's sort of like a cut-off point for ghosts as well. You might get kind of like a Renaissance ghost, the occasional medieval monk. There's no Viking ghosts, there's no Roman ghosts, there's no Neanderthal ghosts.
Are you saying that ghosts have a sell-by date, Ben?
Yes, clearly. They just fade slowly away. And as former guest on this podcast, Archie Maddox, has pointed out, no black ghosts.
Also, where are like the early 2000s Scenester Kid ghosts, right? Like, looking for their Manic Panic hair dye. Where is it?
Singing Mr. Brightside.
Yeah. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, you might have thought that you've accidentally tuned into a particularly ghostly version of The Moral Maze. But before we wander down a dead end, I should introduce this week's guest. She is, as you can already hear, an Irish writer who works in a broad range of formats. And no, I just haven't popped a wig on Barry because I'm feeling lazy this week about getting a guest. Her children's TV pilot, Monsters Bite, was the winner of BBC Script Room in 2014, whilst her horror feature film, Human Child, was one of 8 entrants selected for the 2018 Fright Fest New Blood Workshop. She also has a number of shows, including Sunlight and Silver and Complicated Grief, that have been optioned for the screen. She has also written a children's fantasy novel, Damsel, and is the writer of Gronya O'Malley, Queen's Gambit, a historical comic book all about the meeting of Ireland's pirate queen and Queen Elizabeth I of England. But that is just one string to her enormous bow. As well as being a kick-ass writer, she holds degrees in veterinary medicine and statistics, as well as holding a PhD with the Medical Research Council Biostatics Unit at the University of Cambridge. She has strong opinions about the accurate portrayal of animal sidekicks and has got incredibly strongly held beliefs about the lack of structural integrity in the Griffin. As former holder of the title of Ireland's number one ranked debater, I am not going to poke the angry bear and dissuade her of this notion. It is a proper delight to welcome a true polymath who is probably currently shoulder deep in a splenetic Labrador with one hand whilst writing Gaelic sonnets with the other. Please welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Susan E. Connolly.
Woo, it's me. Hi, how are ya?
Hello.
Really weird when people do that and read the bio, because I'm like, did I do that? I did. God, you remember that? That was a fun time.
Way back in about episode 50 or something, we did World's Worst pirate, and we talked about lots of excellent pirates, including the pirate Queen Grania O'Malley and her meeting with Queen Elizabeth. Did they speak Latin to each other?
Yeah, they spoke Latin to each other well, because Queen Elizabeth obviously didn't speak Irish. Grace O'Malley spoke perfect English, but wanted to be a dick. Which, again, one of the most amazing things about her. Love her. She should be a ghost now. That'd be a class ghost, right?
That's a good
just
ghost.
Just, like, going around, making fun of people, flying her falcon, you know, kicking husbands out of castles because they're her castle now. Like, love it.
We have her over for tea.
Oh, you'd love it. You'd love it. You know, and, like, those weird scones they have out in Clare.
Yes!
My family's from Clare. I'm allowed to say the scones are weird. So.
Yeah. She'd been mad for a scone.
Love a scone.
If you were a ghost, Ben, what baked good would you savour?
The same baked good that I savour as a corporeal human, challah, obviously. Yeah,
obviously.
I would just like to point out, because I felt very much an outcast from that conversation, I too have been to Ireland.
Which part?
Cork, Galway, and to, a bit beginning with a K where I fell off a bike.
Killarney.
Yeah.
Did you kiss the Barney Stone? You know, people pee on that.
I have not had any intimate relations with the Blarney Stone, and I did not inhale either.
That's very telling, Ben. You didn't even get to first base with the Blarney Stone.
First base, that's an American metaphor. Surely all love-making metaphors in Ireland should be based around shinty.
That's Scotland, mate.
Is that Scotland? Oh, it's hitting balls with sticks in the air in an incredibly dangerous reimagining of hockey.
I mean, that is what my sex life is like. You're quite accurate there.
Susan, we always ask our guests what they're worst at in the world. Clearly, you're very good at putting words down on paper, it would seem. But what are you not so good at?
Oh, so, like, I thought about this for a while, because, like, there's a lot of stuff I'm, like, not great at, but, you know, I'm trying to rise to the occasion of the podcast, and then I was asking my friends, and they were all like, Susan, like, there's only one answer, and then they all related their individual stories, which, you know, combine like Captain Planet for the right answer, which is, like, just anything involving the physical coordination of my own body, you know, like the five senses, you know, sight, hearing, touch, smelling, taste, whatever. So there's actually, like, a sixth important one, which has, like, a much more complicated name than, like, smell and touch, which is proprioception.
Yes.
Which is, like, the ability to know where your body is in space, which I don't have. Like, I just don't have it. And I remember, like, a couple of years ago when I was living in Cambridge, a friend of mine, Cliona, came to visit. And it happened, it wasn't planned this way, but she happened to be visiting over St. Patrick's Day. And we were like, oh, let's do something cultural and be really obnoxiously Irish. Like, you know, take that, Brits.
Yeah.
We found this place was having, like, a live Irish music session. So we're like, that'll be tragic. Like, let's go make fun of it. But Cliona was like, oh, I'll teach you, like, an Irish jig. Like, because she's a very good Irish dancer and has taught Irish dancing. And I was like, do we have time? She was like, well, what do you mean? What time is the gig? And I was like, oh, the gig starts at, like, 7 o'clock. And she's like, Susan, it's 2 p.m. Like, yeah, like, I can teach you a jig in, like, you know, 4 hours. Be grand. And I was like, I don't know about this. So about an hour and a half in, she just kind of broke down crying. She was like, Susan, 10-year-olds learn this. Like, 10-year-olds can figure this out. And, well, the sad thing about it is, like, Irish dancing would be the one I'd be best at, because you don't move your arms, right? So I only have to concentrate on, like, two individual limbs. Any kind of coordination or choreography where there's, like, four limbs moving, now that's just not even on it. Like,
yeah. Irish dancing has got the look to me as though someone has attempted to put general anaesthetic into the dancer, but it's only worked its way down to the hips.
Yeah, it's like a ketamine trip.
Well, yeah, ketamine at the top, speed at the bottom.
That's why Michael Flatley caused a whole scandal with Riverdance. Like, he comes on, he moves his arms, and everyone's like, now, come on now.
Yes. How very dare you.
Look at your shirt.
Similar to how Angolan slaves in Brazil developed capoeira as actually a martial art, but disguised it as a dance. Traditional Irish dancing and river dance was equally developed as a martial art to try and repeal the English overlords. The only difference is that the martial art of river dance was disguising is not very effective.
Oh, no, the English have famously weak shins.
Yes. Well, no, the ultimate battle, and I'd quite like to see a stylized British wrestling face-off of Michael Flatley against a tag team of Morris dancers and see who would win.
This week, we are going to discuss the world's worst ghost. We're nothing if timely with our Halloween episodes in the height of the summer sunshine. So, Ben, what have you got for us?
So, world's worst ghost is one of those topics where the amount of material is just overwhelming, because ghosts obviously appear in every single culture around the world, and they're all different types of ghosts. So, I spent a lot of my focus on East Asia and found a lot of fun things there. We're going to begin with a shirame, I think it's pronounced, in Japanese. The line in a lot of these cultures between what's a ghost and what's a demon and what's a spirit is quite thin. So in this case, this is more of a demonic spirit than a ghost. But the shirame comes from a story that long ago, a samurai was walking a night down the road to Kyoto when he heard someone calling out to him to wait. "Who's there?" he asked nervously, only to turn around to find a man stripping off his clothes and pointing his bare buttocks at the flabbergasted traveller. As the traveller looked closer, he looked at the man's anus and saw that where the anus should be, there was a huge glittering eye staring back at him.
Classic ghost sign.
That is my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
Well, we've never seen eye to eye before, but I'm so sorry.
I mean, genuinely, I just had this thought now, and this might be hugely culturally insensitive, but of course, in a lot of transcendental meditation, people talk about opening up your third eye and it being between your two on the middle of your forehead. So maybe this is a deliberate inversion of that.
Maybe so. What did he do?
Well, that's all I could find of the tale. So it turns out what he did is that turned it into an underwhelming after-dinner anecdote. where else did I go? Yeah, so I moved from Japan then to Malaysia. And there's all sorts of different flavours of ghosts in Malaysia. And their conception of the human soul, or as they call it, the semangat, is a little different to ours. They think that the human soul is about the size of a thumb and appears as a miniature form of the body. So I guess sort of like a homunculus in a way.
Right.
And it's able to flash from one location to another. And it's often like compared to and addressed even as if it's a bird. And so if you are asleep or in a trance or sick, it may temporarily leave your body, but it will depart permanently during death. When it leaves the body, at death, it can sometimes, if it is left the body at a particular type of death, feed on the souls of others as a ghost, and those ghosts are often called hantus. Now, there's a whole mythology based around hantus of either children or women who die in childbirth, but lads, comedy podcast, so we're not talking about those. Instead, I looked at ways that people try and avoid ghosts from doing nasty things to them. So often they try and tempt them with a meal. So when the ghost turns into an animal, such as a chicken.
Such as a chicken?
Hang on, hear me out. Yeah.
What sort of ghost is this?
From what I was looking at my notes to understand them properly, I think it's if you offer the ghost a corresponding meal to a particular animal. So if you offer it corn, it may turn into a chicken, and then you kill the chicken, presumably with a ghost knife of some kind.
I thought you were suggesting that like Nando's was a spectral apparition.
Yeah. Well, hold that thought, my friend, because that may be what I come back to.
Really?
Well, if I was a ghost in this circumstance, right, like I just turn into an elephant every time. Elephants eat whatever they want because they're fucking elephants. Corn, yeah. Elephant. You know, you, elephant. Like, these are foolish ghosts. What, never turn into a chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, show a bit more imagination, ghosts.
Yeah.
That is true. Another way that you can evade a ghost is if you formally change your name. So if you change your name by deed poll, the ghost will not recognise you.
You go into like, witness protection.
Pretty much. It's kind of like, I've come to haunt Barry McStay. I think you'll find my name is Jeff Stevens.
Some new TV show ideas right now.
is that that's like though in America where they try and like issue you a subpoena, and they you have to sort of acknowledge that you're you before they can give it to you. Are you Ben Vanderveld? Oh, you said yes. Now I may haunt you.
Pretty much. There's a particular type of hantu called the hantu reya that acts as a sort of a double for the practitioners of black magic. Hantu reya roughly translates as great ghost, and it's broad brushstrokes here. It is vaguely analogous to a witch's familiar. Mm-hmm. And most hantu reyas are humanoid in shape in these large black imposing shadows, and often in a sort of double of its owner. But there are others that are a bit weirder. So you've got hantu airs, which are confusingly water spirits, often the ghosts of people who drowned. They usually can be seen in the form of a floating log, and that log can entice people into the water and drown or eat people.
Crocodile.
It's a crocodile, yeah. There's the hantu gala, or a pole ghost, which is a very tall and thin ghost found amongst bamboo, and to make it disappear, a person simply picks up a stick or a twig and breaks it in two.
Stick insect.
Stick insect, yep. But my favourite of all is the hantu tetek, which translates as nipple ghost. And the nipple ghost appears as an old woman with pendulous breasts. And I think that's just an old woman with pendulous breasts.
Although, like, if I'm an old woman walking along and thinking I could get some corn out of these people, right? I'm like, oh, look at my boobs. I'm definitely a ghost. Give me your corn. I might turn into a chicken. Do you know?
I have to say, I would definitely watch the version of Ghostbusters where they try and cram an old woman with pendulous breasts into small metal boxes.
I also, when we went down sort of the animal route, is where I found some really silly things. So at a place called Thetford Warren Lodge, which is in Norfolk, there's a lodge there built by nearby monks at the Cluniac Priory in the 15th century, and there's a chap there who is in charge of catching rabbits for food and skins. And it is claimed that there is a ghost rabbit there with glowing red eyes who haunts the lodge and is an omen of death to anyone who sees it.
And was created by Aardman Studios?
Yes.
Or just is an albino rabbit. Like,
oh, yeah!
There's all sorts. There is, at the Tower of London, there's a ghost bear that's said to haunt the Martin Tower. Yeah. In 1816, a guards apparently saw it, lunged at the bear with its bayonet, and the bayonet plunged so deep into the wood of the door behind where he thought the bear was, it took two men to remove it.
Wow.
Apparently, the guard fainted from shock and died 2 days later.
Was that guard stood on the other side of the door?
Yeah.
It was the shock of a bayonet in his back.
Probably. I feel like the sources are inconclusive on this one.
Yeah. There used to be a menagerie in the Tower of London.
Did there?
Yeah, the Royal Menagerie was kept there. So various royals were given bears and lions or tigers or other animals and stuff, and they kept them in the Tower of London. So it's not that surprising there'd be a bear there. Except, obviously, it's a ghost and ghosts aren't real. We may as well get that out of the way.
Cool. Like, just a couple more before my choice. If you were to go to Dartmoor, you could encounter the Merivale pigs, who are a phantom sow and her piglets who have been haunting Merripit Hill for over 200 years. So apparently on misty nights when walking the roads, you might stumble across them making their way to Cator Gate, starving, searching for food. Legend has it that they knew if they travelled to that gate, they'd find a dead horse to eat, but upon their arrival, the horse had already been picked clean by the crows. There is also, I think quite famously this one, there's the Black Dog of Newgate Prison.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, Black Dog, symbol of bad luck and death. It was first written about in 1596, and recounted that during a terrible famine in London, the prison inmates had turned to cannibalism, so it was seen as like an omen of that. And equally at a time, someone who was an inmate had been accused of witchcraft and maybe summoning this dog.
Was he found to have a whistle on him?
Yeah. It was claimed that each man who had been accused of cannibalism was then hunted down and torn to pieces by this dog.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But my favourite ghost, and my one that is my suggestion for the world's worst, is this. It is a ghost with a scientific connection. You've heard of Francis Bacon, haven't you guys?
Yes. Not the painter, the 16th century philosopher and so on.
He's the sort of seen as the godfather of empiricism.
I think he died because of a frozen chicken. Am I imagining that?
No, you are not imagining that. He was engaged in a robust debate with a gentleman called Dr. Witherbone, which I'd love to tell you that he was an expert in canine science, but sadly not. And they were talking about preservation and ways to preserve animals. And Bacon went to Highgate, where he got several chickens from different farms. He killed it, cleaned it, packed it with snow, and put it in a large sack with more snow around it to create the world's first frozen chicken. However, whilst doing all of this, Bacon caught a chill, which turned into pneumonia, and he passed away. However, it is not the ghost of Sir Francis Bacon that haunts Highgate. It's the ghost of the chicken that he killed.
Makes sense to me. Poor chicken sacrificed for science. You know, unfinished business.
Yeah. Has someone just left a lot of corn lying around?
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's a strong chance it could be a Malaysian chicken on holidays.
Yeah. Yeah.
So soon after Bacon's death, there were reports of a semi-plucked chicken observed running in circles around Highgate ponds. And also seen in the lower branches of a nearby tree. When anyone approached, it vanished into thin air. There are reports throughout the centuries, including during the Second World War, where air raid wardens in Highgate, who obviously were under no extra pressure that might cause a temporary psychosis based on previous folk stories, claimed they had seen it. There's another story of one who tried to capture it, and the chicken ran through a wall before he got to it. There's another story in Ponsgrove, and they heard what sounded like an invisible coach and horses. The sound stopped, and he saw a chicken, as though the chicken was also capable of doing impressions.
Was it crossing the road in front of the coach and horses?
Yes, indeed.
So it does the odd joke, too.
Well, what, you know, why did the chicken cross the road? To get to the other side.
Podcast over.
Yeah.
That's a joke.
Again, we have shut this podcast down so many times. The ghost was last seen in 1970, so either it's just not a fan of decimalisation, or we are massively overdue another sighting of the Highgate ghost chicken that is partially responsible for the death of Sir Francis Bacon. And so because it killed one of the greatest men of the 17th century, and also because it's kind of quite an underwhelming apparition, that is my choice for the world's worst ghost.
I read the story on the internet one time. The internet. You heard of it? No. This child in school, one time a teacher said to him, "Knowledge is power. France is bacon." And he was like, "What?" And he spent his life kind of trying to figure this out. Like, so he'd say to someone, he'd be like, "Knowledge is power," and they would reply, "France is bacon," and he'd be like, "Right." Or someone would say, "Knowledge is power," and he'd reply, "France is bacon," and they'd be like, "Very profound." He's like, I understand the first bit, knowledge is power, like that makes sense to me. I don't understand why France is bacon. I don't understand why France is a pork product. So somebody's asked people, he'd be like, "You know, knowledge is power, France is bacon," and they'd be like, "Yeah." He's like, "What's I don't understand." They're like, "Well, you see, it's that when you know." And he's like, "No, first bit, I don't understand the France bacon part." I'd explain, and like, it took him ages. And then one time, he, like, finally saw it written down, and he was like, "My life has been a lie." All right, chumps, listen up. I'm going to win this. Okay. So I'm very competitive. Very competitive person. As we all love pedantry and understand that pedantry is the soul of comedy, let me give you my criteria for worstness in a ghost. Right, I was thinking about this, I want to inform my research here. So what makes a good ghost is obviously a couple of things, right? So a good ghost, you want it to be scary or spooky in some way, you know, because then if it's not scary or spooky, I'm not sure it counts as a ghost. I think it's more like a spirit in that case, you know. Mm-hmm. I see a ghost as being like, at the very least, it has to be like a sad ghost, you know,
yeah.
Where it's like, "Oh, I've lost my, beautiful bracelet wears, you know, unfinished
Yeah.
business of a way. So, like, has to
Yeah.
be that. I also think, like, a good ghost has to be unique. You don't want some kind of common or garden ghost that you could see in lots of places. You want, like, a unique ghost that you could, like, ideally use to make your hotel make tons of money from ghost hunters. Do you know? You want your
Yeah.
ghost to have a USP. Like, I think that's pretty important, like, for a ghost.
Yeah.
I think you want, like, your ghost to have, like, some kind of, like, really interesting story behind it as well, in terms of it. So that's what I think makes, like, a good ghost.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, let's find, like, the opposite of this. And so I've a couple of options. I have a favorite, but I'll go through my options with you. One that I quite enjoy is in, I stayed closer to home. I didn't go all around the world. I was kind of like Ireland and Great Britain. That's where we'll look.
Fair
So
enough.
in Donaghadee in County Down, there is a pub called Grace Neal's. Apparently, it's the oldest pub in Ireland.
One of several oldest pubs in Ireland.
I was about to say, yeah, I'm like, I wonder did they add the ghost in to, like, just add to that USP situation. This lady, Grace Neal, ran it around, like, 1900s to, like, the early 20th century. Grand. And she dies, and apparently she's, like, still hanging out there. So here's what apparently she does. She walks around, she moves glasses and books around, turns the lights on and off. That's what she does. And I'm like, so she's kind of tidying, she's basically my mum, right?
Yeah, just gonna say.
Just like, it's dark in here, turns on the light. It's too bright, turn off the lights, turns off the lights. Like, these books don't go here. There you go. Like, no, those are the good glasses.
That should have a coaster under it.
It's basically if Hyacinth Bouquet was a poltergeist.
Yeah, like, and it's just the most boring thing you've ever seen. Like, if you saw this ghost, right, if this was your supernatural experience, you'd be like, this is not worth it. I just feel it's, like, very anticlimactic, you know. Oh, like, there's a ghost, you're gonna see a ghost, you get super excited to see the ghost, like, maybe there's gonna be, like, blood running down the walls or something, you're gonna get a great old scare, and, like, essentially she just tidies up your drinks for you.
Does she have a contract? If she's, you know, tidying up and putting people's glasses away and stuff, or is she like, is she 0 hours? What's the employment status of the ghost?
I think she probably, like, is an employee,
Yeah.
right? But they're, like, putting her under as an independent contractor so that they don't pay
Yeah.
benefits. My guess,
Yeah, that's fair.
situation. And so then my second option is, so I've been to this place, didn't see a ghost, but, like, I was there. And this is, like, a very classic kind of Irish ghost story because obviously the devil is involved.
Yeah.
We love hanging out with the devil in this situation. So, like, basically, there's this place in Ireland called Loftus Hall, which is on the Hook Head Peninsula in Wexford. Hook Head is pretty cool because, you know, the phrase by hook or by crook.
Yes.
Yes, it's referring to locations. One of them is Hook.
Yes,
Hook
there's a
Head.
lighthouse at Hookhead as well, which I think is quite old.
Abroad, yeah. So it's at Hook Hall, and they have this Loftus Hall, this place, and it's, like, one of those, like, hilarious aristocratic situations where, like, basically there's, like, only daughters. Like, what a tragedy. So, like, this guy Charles Tottenham becomes Lord of the Manor because he, like, marries one of the daughters and then is like, I'm Mr. Loftus now. And everyone's like, oh, great situation. This won't go badly at all, right? So he had, like, some kids with his wife, and then, oh, she died. Who could have suspected this? I'm just going to marry my cousin Jane, who I've loved my whole life. Lol, you know?
Yeah.
Classic situation. So living in the house is Charles, his wife cousin Jane, and his daughter Anne from his first wife. And as you do, a ship arrives during a storm. And as you do, you just welcome a random young man into your house, like normally. And you totally have no problems with your young daughter becoming, like, super good friends with this strange young man who arrived on a ship. And then you just have a normal time playing cards. And then when you pick up a card you've dropped on the floor, you notice, sure, doesn't he have goat's hooves?
Yeah.
That you haven't up until this point noticed, can I point out? But presumably he's been walking around with goat hooves the whole time. Like, was he wearing shoes that he, like, kicked off while playing cards? Or did, like, was it impolite to look at feet in these times? Like, I'm not sure. But anyway, finally you're like, oh my God, this guy has goat's hooves. And then he, like, jumps up through the roof and is gone. So at this point, there's no ghosts, right? But it's just like your normal Irish devil playing cards story, of which there are multiple, like
Hundreds of them.
there actually are, aren't
It's actually part of the nationality test. Have you
there?
ever played cards with a guy with cloven feet? Congratulations, welcome to Ireland.
Or just like if you're playing cards, the guy and he's got kind of supernatural luck, like what are you going to check for? Yeah, old cloven feet. Anne is like, oh, I really miss my devil boyfriend. Like, I miss him so much. And so what the family does is, and this is the way they spin it, is like, oh, she's just really sad all the time. It's not that we're like ashamed of our mentally ill daughter. She's just really sad. So what we've decided to do is lock her in her favorite room where she'll be happy all the time. It's for her benefit that we've done. But for whatever reason, they lock their daughter away in a small room where she apparently, quote unquote, refuses food and drink. Definitely not that they deliberately starved her to death. And then she dies. But oh, she just really wanted to only sit in one position in a chair, and that's why she died in this like really weird scrunched up position. It's definitely not they like tied her up or anything. Like definitely not. So yeah, so shockingly, turns out when you lock your daughter in a room and starve her to death and tie her up and then she dies, like you get a bit of an out ghost situation going on. This story again, like, so you're like, okay, this is a good backstory, right? You're like, it's ticking some of the boxes. It's good backstory, like it's pretty unique, you know? Like, sadly not as unique as you might want it to be. Like a lot of castles have a little wall up room where you wall up people who are boring you. But like, what does she do as a ghost? Nothing. She just mopes around. Mopes around looking out windows to the sea.
Sort of
So
a moaning myrtle type figure.
yeah. Not even moaning. Just like, oh, I'm at a window. And like you go by the window and it's like, oh, it's a bit cold here at a window. What a shocker. Like, oh. And I'm just like, you know, you have enough backstory here that you could be doing some real spooky stuff.
I went to a boarding school which had a serpentine gallery, so which linked the main bit of the school to the old bit of the school was a castle where the Jesuit community who ran the school lived, and it was linked to the newer building by this
I
gallery
love how
where
you
they
say
used to
like a school as if I now don't immediately know what school it was.
yes, as if you don't immediately know. But the gallery had photographs and images of famous past pupils down the walls. And there were various ghost stories about the place, including one which said that if you were walking down the corridor at midnight on, I think it was New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve, I can't remember which one, and you heard footsteps behind you, you weren't to turn around because if you turned around, you'd be sucked into one of the pictures on the wall, which made me laugh immensely because, like, one of the pictures on the wall was of the 1990s Irish Taoiseach John Bruton. Just think. It's not quite the same as like a ghostly unnamed figure from the 1600s. It's, oh, yeah, there's your man who's gone off to work for the UN now.
Also, from what I've learned about boarding schools and public schools, if you can hear footsteps behind you when you're walking alone at night, then it's not ghosts you need to be afraid of.
I'm trying to think, like, who would be like the most boring? Oh, it's Leo Varadkar. Sorry. I was like, who'd be the most boring Irish politician to be stuck in a painting with? And I was like, who? Clearly Leo.
Yeah,
Like, clearly
Lee'd be
Leo.
getting you up early to do like workouts together.
Oh, like he'd probably want you to like listen to like improving books on tape or something. No. Like, oh,
He'd have a
God.
rota for who was cooking.
Oh, he would. And he'd want like everyone to sit down and eat together. Oh, world's worst housemate.
Sorry for everyone who's not Irish, we've lost over the last 2 minutes.
Once again, I'd like to say that I have visited Ireland.
Okay, but my actual pick for like worst ghost, right? So according to my criteria, right, of like, because this is like this is not a worst ghost, this is a best boy, okay? Because is this idea of a church grim, right? Which on the face of it, you think, oh, that might be scary, right? It's a big black dog who haunts a graveyard, and you're like, okay, I can see this being scary. It's not scary though. It's lovely, right? So the idea is that the first person you bury in a graveyard then has to guard that graveyard from the devil. Okay?
Ah, is
And
that a
people were like,
common idea? I've not
it's like
heard
an
that.
English thing,
Okay.
apparently, right? And so they think about it and they're like, all right, well, who would be the best person who's gonna like guard the graveyard from the devil? And they're like, you know, human people aren't gonna be any good at that job. You know, who's gonna be class at it? A dog person. Like, because dogs have personalities, which makes them people, right? So when you open a new graveyard, first thing you do is you have like a funeral for dog, right? You bury your dog, and then your dog becomes the church grim. So he's like a lovely, sweet boy who like greets all the new spirits and is like, "Hey mates, like give us an out scratch behind the ears. Don't worry, it's all gonna be all right. I'll just walk
Oh.
you through now on the way to heaven. And if there's any devil business, now I'll deal with that, you know."
That's
And
amazing.
that's what he does. And like, but like that's not like he's a ghost, right? But like he's the best boy, you know, or girl.
Yeah.
But like not
Oh.
in any way like meeting any criteria for being like ghostly or spooky or creepy. And there's also like tons of them. They're all around being like delightful in all the graveyards. Aren't they sweet?
That's so nice.
Don't you just
Ah.
want to die so you can meet him?
That actually makes the idea of death a little easier to bear when you think, well, you're going to get a pet.
Exactly. A real sweetie. And imagine like little poor kids who die and then like a lovely dog is there.
If it's to guard the graveyard, they need to be a dog of some size.
The spirit, right? You know how like a tiny Jack Russell thinks
Yeah.
that it's like a dog the size of an elephant?
Yeah, that's true.
You know? But I do wonder, like, did they just wait for a dog to die, or is it a bit more sinister?
Oh no, don't say that.
Like, you gotta think about it.
Could have just gone, well, why don't we get like a policeman as the first person we bury in our graveyard?
Well, like, are policemen very good at guarding against the devil? Like, it's
That's
not
true.
investigatory. Like, it's not like
Yeah.
who's stealing these souls? Like, it's always the devil. Like, you know it's
It's,
him.
you're right,
Like,
it's preventative, not investigatory.
exactly. Right. But like a bouncer actually would be class, like a club bouncer.
You're not getting in here with them cloven feet.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's about shoes. Bouncers always look at
Yes!
your shoes.
That's what we need. We need ghost bouncers. But
Trained to look at feet.
also,
They're
bouncer's a good name for a dog. So
nice.
the
Nice.
bouncer could have a dog ghost with him.
Heaven is the world's most exclusive nightclub.
Yeah.
Which it also is in London as well, isn't it? I know Graham Norton goes there, which to me is like the height of fanciness.
That's true. Yeah. Do they have like, are there graveyards with like statues of these dogs or like anything to like denote that, oh, this graveyard is under the protection of Snowy or whatever?
I don't know, but like I'd feel like no, because you don't want to warn the devil off. You know, you don't want the devil being like, "Well, I'll just go to all the other graveyards
You don't
and
have a
steal all those
beware of
souls."
the dog sign up.
Yeah. I mean, I do wonder. Presumably, these ghosts can't ever be poltergeisty, because like you would worry about them digging up the bones.
Yes, it's true. It's the ideal job for a dog, but the amount of training, it must be like training guide dogs for the blind. You've got to be training like ghost dogs for the graveyards to not dig up the bones, no matter how great the temptation is.
I love all those dogs who like fail out of like guard dog training, or like fail out of drug sniffing dog training for just being like
Too
too
lovely.
fun. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's who I want.
That's so nice. All right, Church Grimms. Oh, the best ghosts.
Yeah, that's my thing. That's my pick, because I'm
That's
like,
great.
they're the worst by being the best.
I read about some famous people who encountered ghosts. This is another film idea. Joan Rivers purchased a swanky Upper East Side penthouse condo in 1988 because it was in an old, like, Gilded Age mansion. And she had to deal with the ghost of a former resident, the niece of J.P. Morgan.
Oh.
Just Rivers said the apartment was always cold, couldn't get the electricity, any of the electricals to work. Her pet Yorkshire Terrier refused to enter one of the rooms for months. She kept seeing strange graffiti on the walls. And apparently, the building's elevator operator heard about the occurrences. He said, "I guess Mrs. Spencer is back." This is Morgan's niece who used to live in the building in the, I think it must have been in the early 20th century.
You know that there's a house that is legally haunted, like as declared by a judge. Basically, these people moved into a house and they were like, "This house is haunted," and they sued the seller and they were like, "You should have told us that this was a haunted house, or because we wouldn't have bought it." And the seller's like, "Yeah, no, like it is haunted, like I agree, but I have no legal obligation to tell you that it's haunted. Like you should have figured this out on inspection.
Yeah.
Presumably, you bring a paranormal person with you." And so it went to court and the judge was like, "So like here's the thing. Like, if you don't believe in ghosts, you've no legal obligation to tell people that it's haunted.
Yeah.
Given that you guys do believe in ghosts, like, you believe it's haunted, like, the fact of it being haunted is not what's at dispute here. the dispute is, do you have an obligation to tell them? And he's like, so I think you do. So therefore, yes, you are in violation of like full disclosure. So therefore, the house is officially legally haunted. And now anyone who buys a house has to be told legally this is a haunted house.
That's I bet that whatever judge drew that case must
Oh,
have
had a
been
good.
had a great time.
Yeah,
He's like,
right.
I'm gonna settle down for a few days and enjoy this one. That's amazing. Yeah, apparently Joan Rivers, she got a New Orleans voodoo priestess to cleanse the home. She made up with the ghost by hanging a portrait of her in the building lobby and leaving flowers out for her, rather than corn or anything else. And Sting claims that he's seen ghosts as well. He used to live in quite a old manor house. I don't know if he still does, he and his wife and their kids. And he says he woke up at 3 o'clock in the morning, presumably just after having finished having very long sex. And he looked into the corner of the room and he said, I saw my wife Trudy standing there with a child, our child in her arms, staring at me. Sting then reached over and noticed that Trudy was still in bed. So, and first, you read that far and you think, what? He saw the ghost of someone who was still alive.
But I've read stories about stuff like that, of really creepy stuff of a couple living together and the wife seeing herself coming out of a room and then looking round, and obviously there's no one in there. Or and then her husband also seeing both himself and herself just leaving a room. So it's a particularly strange type of haunting.
How up yourself though? There it is. He is a ghost. Don't look great.
Oh, I look so thin. Sting said, when you live in old houses, you get this energy there. And of course, Dan Aykroyd has had experiences with ghosts.
Of course he has.
When he wanted to do Ghostbusters, he wanted to do it like real serious at first, because he was like, ghosts are real, though.
Yeah, no,
Like,
he said he used to live in a house that was haunted by Mama Cass, Cass Elliot from the Mamas and the Papas. And he says he saw things moving around on the counter, doors opening and closing. He said his staff had various experiences, experiences of people touching them, then turning around and no one being there. And one day, Aykroyd claimed one of two ghosts climbed into bed with him while he was taking a nap. He woke up in a trance, noticed the bedroom's previously closed door was ajar. Then he spotted a depression in the mattress, like someone was getting in there. He said he wasn't afraid of ghosts, so he just decided to snuggle up to them instead of screaming for help.
Well, that's me. That's me after, like, in lockdown, though. I'm just like, I'd cuddle a ghost. Like, I honestly, like, physical contact would be great right now, you know?
I read about ghost photographs and spirit photography. I read about this amazing guy called William Mumler. He is credited with creating the first photograph to show a ghost in the 1860s. He didn't, ghosts aren't real. Just don't know how many times we're going to have to reiterate that during this podcast. But it wasn't a ghost. It was an accidental double negative exposure thing while he was taking a self-portrait. But he was involved in photography at the time, but he saw this as a chance to make a business where members of the public would have their portrait exposed with the image of a dead relative. And the 1860s in America was at the height of the Civil War, so a large number of people had lost relatives, and so this guy thought lucrative business opportunity to take advantage of people's grief. And so he set up this business, which would, you know, just be getting people to come in and they'd have a photograph taken that he'd develop, and he'd sort of have the faint image of a loved one stood behind them if they were sat in a chair or with their arms wrapped around them or whatever. Apparently his wife as well was also a healing medium, in inverted commas, according to this article. And she had her own spiritual business going on along the same time. He was criticized roundly by people, including P.T. Barnum. And when P.T. Barnum is calling you a shyster, you know you're probably in the wrong court. He it was taken to court by Barnum and others in April 1869. He was brought to trial for fraud. Basically, they all accused him of staging these photographs by breaking into houses to steal photos of the deceased relatives. And then using it to create the double exposure negative thing. Barnum at this trial hired another photographer, Abraham Bogardus, to create a photo that showed Barnum with the ghost of Abraham Lincoln beside him to show how easily it could be done. And Mumler was acquitted because the prosecution couldn't prove beyond all doubt that he was fabricating the photos the way they said. But his career never properly recovered and he died in poverty. Lol. That's how most stories in the 1800s end. And he died in poverty. But he created one of these photographs he created had Mary Todd Lincoln with the ghost of Abraham Lincoln in it, with the ghost of her dead husband.
Lincoln's around, right? So,
well, this is after Lincoln had died. It's the early 1870s.
Yeah, his ghost is around.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It hadn't passed its expiry date at this point. Now, apparently, the Mumler didn't know that his sitter was Mrs. Lincoln because she changed her name. There's a whole podcast to do about Mary Todd Lincoln's life after Abraham Lincoln died, and she was sort of shunned by Washington society, and she was sort of conned into selling jewelry, and she changed her name and all this stuff. So she came to him as a Mrs. Tundle, I think, and it was only when he developed the photograph and he saw them together that he sort of put it together in his head about who they were. That's William Mumler, and he wasn't the only guy to be taking these sort of fake photos in the 1800s. There was a woman called Sybil Corbett took a photograph in the library at Combermere Abbey in 1891 in Cheshire in England, and in the foreground is a chair with the faint outline of a man's head and collar and arm, and they thought it was the ghost of Lord Combermere, who had recently died in a riding accident, because 1800s, and it was being buried at the time the photo was taken. It was a long exposure, it took about an hour. Most skeptics said it was probably a servant just wandered in and had a sit down in the midst of doing chores, sat still long enough for them to actually appear in the long exposure.
Well, yeah, well, that's it. That's why so many of these particularly creepy images turn up in Victorian times, because, like you were alluding to before, Susan, like the way Victorians dressed lent itself to being deeply creepy anyway. Yeah. And then, yeah, the nature of the way photographs were made then makes it so easy for ghostly apparitions to appear.
The first scientific group formed to examine psychic and paranormal mysteries was the Society for Psychical Research in 1882. Want to guess any of its members?
Conan Doyle will have been there.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who's the guy who wrote Alice in Wonderland? He was mad.
Oh, off. Lewis Carroll. No, I don't think he was, but Charles Dickens was as well.
Nice.
And there are modern Ghostbusters, again, inverted commas, ghosts aren't real, guys, who go around basically cleaning house for people. You mentioned this idea of the homeowner having the onus to declare if the house is haunted. If people can get in, people who hire themselves out to cleanse their houses, as I say, Joan Rivers got a voodoo priestess. There's a woman called Amy Blackthorne, a self-described witch from Newark, Delaware, who cleanses homes for a fee. She and her group of fellow witches sort of purge homes with burning a mixture of Epsom salts and rubbing alcohol. In one case, they once burnt a 12-year-old girl's Ouija board, believing it was responsible for bringing spirits into her family's mid-19th century Pennsylvania home.
You know, you're setting yourself up for, like, pretty big haunting, right? Like, with all of this ghosts aren't real stuff. Like, this is essentially, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie. Like, you're being very cavalier here.
Poltercast. That's what the movie will be called. Something like that.
Nice.
You can also get, obviously, exorcisms are a thing you can get as well. For example, the Reverend Gary Thomas has been casting out souls for, you know, 10 or 12 years. He starts by saying the prayer of Pope Leo XIII, and then sprinkles a mixture of holy water and salt in each room and around the garden as well, in the garage and on the lawn. And his life experiences are depicted in the film The Rite from 2011 with Anthony Hopkins.
The sprinkling of salt in an exorcism. Are bad spirits all slugs?
But didn't we talk about the vampire thing, how they count grains
anything
when you they just think, so maybe it's related to that scattering it on the floor distracts the
well
spirits.
Salt is like, I mean, not to get intellectual on the podcast, but like salt is like
please don't,
generally considered to be like a purifying thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, because, like, you know, kills bacteria, which are essentially just really tiny ghosts that infect you and give you diseases. But I think it's also like salt was like so like expensive and necessary and stuff. Like, you'd want to be like, you know, to make people believe you're doing a really good exorcism, be like, and this like very valuable thing, right?
Yeah.
It has to work if it's valuable.
Yeah, that's true. You've put some time and effort and money behind the whole project.
Exactly.
But possibly also ghost slugs. apparently, if you do encounter a ghost in your home, according to Mary Marshall, founder of the Paranormal MD, a Chicago area volunteer paranormal investigation group, and when it's, it has the word volunteer in it, that's even more worrying. She says, you calmly tell the ghost that you wish them well, but it's time to cross over. The majority of those ghosts were good people in life, so their spirits might turn out to be equally polite. Communication is key. But my choice for the world's worst ghost comes from the world of theatre hauntings. Because theatre ghosts are sort of a fairly common thing. A lot of the old theatres, certainly in Britain, are Victorian or Edwardian buildings. So one of the most haunted, apparently, is Drury Lane. The building has been burnt down several times. So we're on to the fourth incarnation of the theatre in Drury Lane. But the current building is about 200 years old. But you can go down into the basement and you can go down to like the 17th century foundations. And they have like a bone from a body they found in a display case and stuff like that. But apparently among the ghosts that haunt Drury Lane are the Regency clown Joseph Grimaldi, a figure called the Man in Grey, who patrols the upper circle in a riding cloak and tri-corner hat, and panto dame Dan Leno, who whenever you try and find him, he's always just behind you, I'm sure. Yeah, apparently his ghost smells of a lavender oil. The Edinburgh Playhouse has a former stagehand that wanders around, and
a working class ghost.
Yeah, there we go. We found
one.
But apparently, in 2009, Patrick Stewart reported glimpsing the spirit of the 19th century actor John Baldwin Buckstone when he was performing in Waiting for Godot at the Theatre Royal in Haymarket in London. He joins a list that includes both Judi Dench and Donald Sinden as also having seen this same ghost at some point.
I 100% believe that Patrick Stewart and Judi Dench are just pranking us. Like,
yes.
That's exactly the kind of thing they think is really funny. Like, let's pretend we saw a ghost, lads. Come on.
Sometime down their career, they went, we're going to pick a theatre, and at some point in our career, we'll work there, and then we'll say, we saw this ghost.
100%.
There was a Sky Arts documentary that tried to capture Buckstone on camera. It did not, because ghosts aren't real, guys. But my choice for the world's ghost ghost, so you went with an animal, Ben. I've gone with an animal, because animal ghosts are the least interesting ghosts. The Theatre Royal in Bath is home to the so-called Phantom Butterfly.
Have they just mixed up a musical and an opera by mistake? Yeah.
The story of this is, at Christmas 1948, they were staging a new pantomime, Little Red Riding Hood, in the theatre. And the director was a guy called Reg Maddox, who had a big spectacular ballet scene, which all the dancers were going to be dressed as butterflies, and it was going to have a large butterfly set piece. And one day, a dead tortoiseshell butterfly was found on the stage, and shortly after, Reg Maddox, the director, died. So his son, Fred, took over as director. Fred decided he was going to cut the ballet scene from the show, and apparently nothing went well with the production from then on. Then, during rehearsal one day, a live tortoiseshell butterfly was seen flying around the feet of the dancers, and at this point the production's fortunes suddenly improved. The dancing got better, the whole thing went ahead, it was a huge success, and now apparently every time a live butterfly is seen on stage, it's apparently during the run of a successful show. The most famous occasion apparently was in 1979. Leslie Crowther, the actor, was playing Wishy Washy in Aladdin, and a butterfly landed on his shoulder. He tells the story, I must say that nothing was further from my mind when I prepared in the wings to make my entrance in the Boxing Day matinee, but then a miracle happened. After Reg Maddox had allowed me sufficient time to establish rapport with the audience, he fluttered down from the spotlight in the form of a tortoiseshell butterfly and alighted on my left shoulder. I gently scooped it/him up and then released it/him into the wings, meanwhile telling the audience that I would tell them at the end of the performance why I was looking so gobsmacked, which I did. So at the end of the show, he came out from behind the curtain and told the audience the story of Reg Maddox and the butterfly. And Leslie Crowther went on to say, he stuck around for days and days. Sometimes we spotted him in the front of house, sometimes backstage, but I'll never forget the first time he fluttered down from the spotlight. And yes, the pantomime was a big success. Apparently, they keep the butterfly set from the original panto hanging up in the fly tower of the theatre to this day. So it's kept as a reminder of the story of the Phantom Butterfly. During the 1981 renovation of the theatre, it was removed to protect it and then hung back up again. when they had finished the renovations. In February 1981, members of the stage crew began to sort through some theatrical mementos in the prop store, and they came across a heavy wooden box. When they opened it, 6 tortoiseshell butterflies flew out. Inside it was also a photograph of Reg Maddox. And in more recent years, the butterfly fluttered down to greet Honor Blackman when she was doing a press call in October 1985. And apparently on one day, the box office reached £100,000 in a year, and it was outside tapping on the window of the box office when it happened. And so people are like, oh, this must be supernatural, because no, you don't usually see butterflies during the winter months. But, I mean, you can. It's in a warm old building.
But also, like, what I'm hearing here is that, like, as a producer, you're like, I think I need some kind of press about my inadequate show.
Yes.
To buy some butterflies.
I, again, in my boarding school, the church in the school has unseasonal butterflies, which just appear during the sermon and things like that.
Jesus
butterflies. Rather than, I wouldn't go, oh, look, it's a ghost. I would go, you've got a pest problem which needs Rent-A-Kill to come in, not Rent-A-Ghost. So let me recap. Our candidates this week for the world's worst ghost are Ben's suggestion of the ghost of Sir Francis Bacon's frozen chicken. We've all gone for animals, I've just noticed. Susan's suggestion of the very best guard ghosts, Church Grimms. And my suggestion, the phantom butterfly of the Theatre Royal in Bath. And I know, Susan, you came in with such high hopes and such determination. But the ghost of Sir Francis Bacon's frozen chicken...
Yes!
...is a sentence I never thought I would say in my lifetime.
My ghost would eat your ghost.
Yeah, that's true. And I think... I think sometimes just glorious failure trumps just not being a terribly exciting ghost. And actually, I quite like Church Grimms. I want one of my very own. Whereas the Ghost of Francis Bacon's Frozen Chicken, I think we need, that's the film we need to write.
What, Ghost Chicken with Sir Francis Bacon?
Casper, the friendly ghost of Sir Francis Bacon's Frozen Chicken. So I'm sorry to have to be the bearer of bad news, Susan, but hands down, the ghost of Sir Francis Bacon's frozen chicken, which is a sentence I'm now going to keep saying for the rest of my life.
All right, I'll be gracious in my defeat, especially because you're getting a haunting, definitely, like, yeah, after this podcast.
Yeah, so you're gonna set your ghostly chihuahua on. Before we go, I've got to give you some of the world's best news of the week, which we are doing until lockdown ends, when we can revert to the world's worst news of the week. And it is simply this, that after 30 years as a fan of my football club, Liverpool FC have finally won the top division in English football again. And it's good news not just for me, but I'm sure football fans everywhere are delighted to see the natural order of things restored at long last.
I'd like to congratulate you on being the ultimate pub quiz question for the 22nd century of, yeah, which football team was both the earliest and the latest champions of the Premier League ever. And yeah, also, just to point out, obviously you think that's the football news that everyone wants to hear, but I think we're all delighted that Newcastle United stumbled over the line to a 1-1 draw against relegation candidates Aston Villa.
That's the... You know, we've had Captain Tom Moores and we've been waiting for the new heroes to come along.
Yeah. But you didn't win by, like, winning football, right? Like, other people lost football and hence you won football. Like, you weren't playing any football. Like, it's a bit pathetic, right?
Technically, yesterday we weren't playing football. We've played quite a lot of football this year. It's not that.
It's more that someone else lost some football and then you were really happy about it.
It's sort of quite a jiu-jitsu approach to winning the Premier League. You know, letting someone else make the mistake for you.
You're right, though. We should have just not played any football at all this year. And eventually, once everyone else had lost a match, gone, well, we're the only ones who haven't lost a match this year, so we've won the league.
I just think the timing of it's not very cinematic. Do you know?
No, it is true. To be honest, I don't fucking care. I was worried they were going to cancel the season at one point during lockdown. So,
I saw a video of the Liverpool players celebrating, and I thought it'd be like on the pitch, and they'd be in their uniforms. They're all just like sat around outside someone's gaff.
They're
like
sat outside a golf club. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can't have an open top parade or anything. But I genuinely don't care. I have spent my entire childhood, teenage years and adult life waiting for this to happen, and I am going to savour every second of it. I was so cynical about the return of football as well, and now it's happened. I'm such a hypocrite.
the listeners won't be able to see your happy little face, like, but let me tell you, everybody, like, it's a very happy little face.
It
Like,
is.
He's got a big smile on him there and his big Irish head.
listen, before we go, Susan, where can people find out more about you and your work?
Nowhere. It's all secret. No. So I'm on the Twitter. I tweet the tweets at Susan Connolly. It's Connolly though, with two O's and two L's. There's no E's in it. That's a Galway Connolly situation. We're Monaghan Connollys. So just don't no E's.
No E's.
Susan Connolly, I don't know what she tweets. I hate her. probably doesn't exist, but you know, not real. That's probably the old best type situation. Now I'm like, God, have I ever said anything terrible on Twitter? Like, I don't think so. But
yeah, I've been on it for over 10 years. I'm sure I've said something awful at some point. But I'm not successful enough for anyone to care yet.
I mean, I did check your Twitters to make sure you weren't terrible people before I came on this, do you know?
That's a relief.
Maybe I didn't check far back enough, but...
we encourage people to go and check you out on there and to go and find some of your work as well. Meanwhile, we're all off to the ghostly Battersea Dogs Home to see what pets we can bring home. I'm hoping for a poodle. Thank you for listening to Wrestle Forward. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.